Vermont First and First Avenue and Third Street, those are private businesses who, people who take from Rochester. They're not chain restaurants. They're mom and pops. So I do appreciate your comment on food trucks. I've supported the food trucks, but I just also wanted to point out that our businesses down there, the restaurants, are also mom and pops or brokers.
So perhaps we could give some guidance as we look at the bullet items where the city clerk is asking for some clarification or input. Mr. Campion?
Yeah, so I would be supportive of eliminating the specific zones. I would like to see the establishment of a 9 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. zone that covers the area between 2nd Avenue, Broadway, 2nd Street, and 4th Street, and just allow the late night operators to use any available parking spot in that range. I agree. I actually think the hours of operation are fine as it stands. You know, I want to specifically stay out of regulating the food trucks outside of the Central Business District. The whole reason we started this was that there was some trepidation about allowing them in that specific region. I think outside of that region, I hear almost no complaints. So anything we can do, I'm not sure. I didn't really get the story about the conditional use permit, but they should not require a conditional use permit to park a vehicle in a parking lot and serve food out of it. That should not require a special privilege to do in the city of Rochester. So I'd like to make sure that we're as forthcoming with that. But generally, everything I've heard today is supportive. If you have ideas for how to get rid of the time delay in issuing a license, that seems thoughtful.
All right, Mr. Bilbet, any other comments on the first bullet item?
Well, I'm just a comment on Mr. Campion. I'm just curious. So, again, we're going to make sure that they're not in front of restaurants if they have patio service.
I actually don't. I mean, if that becomes a problem, but this is like 9 p.m. until 2:30 a.m. most, the food service.
I don't know if Hefe Rojo, if that's a facility along that area that serves after 9 p.m. and they have an outside patio.
Dooley's does.
Dooley's does, yeah. So, question then, how do you handle that?
I think the zone is already fairly close to Dooley's, so we should ask and see how. Maybe we should ask and see if they experience people bringing food from the food trucks up on their patio. But ultimately, to me, like, this is probably the 1% case that we're tooling for right now, if there's someone taking food and doing that. And I think
I don't know.
A lot of this is bar exit, people going out to get a snack and do that. So. They do.
Yes. Take it from there and sit in front of Dooley's. Mm-hmm. Plus, those ones they take it from aren't going to be there anymore.
Right, right. Well, so those spots are gone, right? So we have to find some other spot, I think, to get this to sit. I just assume not be back here redefining it every year as it changes. So if we just open up the zone, it seems like a good answer.
Mm-hmm. So is there general agreement with the city clerk's recommendation for that first item? At least give that a shot for a year and see if see how it works. I'm not sensing that there's a desire to extend the hours of operation overall.
Just out of curiosity, maybe a question for the chief. I mean, what I've been out there where there gets to be a line in there, and I mean at 2:30 it's cut off, right? If you're standing in line waiting to order, you're cut off right now.
You're right.
I mean, theoretically, so if we say 2:30 and people are in line getting through the line, staff knows how to address that appropriately.
Yeah, we can shut that down.
Well, I mean, it's not my intent to necessarily shut it down, but...
Well, what I've understood the problem to be is that it gets close to 2:30 and there's a line. The person in the food truck takes an order from everybody in line. Hmm. Now he says he's got to take care of that, so he keeps selling and selling. Well, and that's... But the cutting it off at some point is the idea, and if by continuing, we're just not helping the issue, because if it takes till 3:30 to feed everybody that's in line, that's made an order.
So, no matter what time you pick, there'll be people still waiting.
And you know, my take is I would be okay with extending the time. It's nothing I would fall on a sword over, perfect. So I'm fine with the consensus.
I think... Yeah, I haven't heard the operators come in knocking my door down to get it extended, so at this point I don't want to fight over something that's not a consensus need.
And I'm not sure how many of the food trucks are doing that, but I know there is at least one that does that.
Mm-hmm. I think that is the issue, is that they are wanting, obviously wanting to serve the people that have been standing out there waiting. And, you know, to your point, I think, you know, we can regulate that and be reasonable and not let it become that, well, it's 3:30 in the morning now. So I think we can reasonably juggle that so it's not...
Here's the end of the line. This is it.
Yeah. So, leave it alone?
Yeah.
So then bullet three really isn't necessary, correct? Because we're not going to talk about an extra time frame and a fee and so forth. Fourth bullet item about special events that incorporate food trucks.
I just think it needs to be defined. So when you talk about the plaza, exactly what that means, because I can see some trucks being parked on the street and we'll get complaints that they're not licensed appropriate yet. They're working on events, but I think, as Mr. Negber stated, there is that zone, so maybe that could be included to clarify where that is.
Can we just say that food trucks are included in special event permits? You know, if you would do your permit, you know, that would, I think we include other things like noise amplification in there, and you put in your permit, yeah, we're going to have food trucks. It's covered by that.
Good.
So, I mean, that's that.
Okay, Mr. Negber, you have a comment?
So I would add to that, if it's okay, is to say, in our park, we should do concessionaire permits for any food trucks to go through a separate activity like that. For events, they're actually covered by the events, so that would qualify for your language there, Michael. But through a general concessionaire permit, we do authorize that also.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't really understand the synergy of those statements. So what is the plan for handling on Peace Plaza? There is none.
Well, Peace Plaza and events that RDA puts on or one of their rentals, if there's a spot for a food truck to be there, that is be part of that bigger event.
And covered under the licensure of the bigger event, not...
Correct.
And,
yeah.
Okay.
Just like a tent or anything else that would be
perfect
there.
Is that sufficiently clear for the clerk's office?
Perfect.
All right. And it sounds like you've got some language that would clean up some definitions surrounding prepackaged foods, etc. I do agree with the suggested change of the charter such that we don't have this protracted approval period. That makes sense if we can make that change.
Yeah. So what's the hurry,
Commission? I'm sorry?
What's the hurry? They got 30 days. Figure it out.
Why?
We don't do that with a restaurant that said all of a sudden you can open tomorrow if you haven't got all your license and all that.
I mean,
just say, what's the hurry?
If the time's not needed for us to execute on this, why force the wait on them?
They know they want a place in June, start doing the process now.
I guess so.
Most of these are probably already have a restaurant anyway that they've now got a food truck out there.
Mr. Kennedy?
Yeah, I guess in my mind it's a seasonal license, so they don't have unlimited time to serve. I can understand why you take the perspective that says anticipate that, but at the same time, I know a lot of people are working. I've seen a few food trucks around town that I haven't seen before, so I'm surprised to hear no one's been in for a license yet. Maybe I'll post that to make sure people know they need to be coming down here, but I've seen people rehabbing these trucks, so I think that there's going to be additional demand for the season. I'm surprised they're not in there yet. I would just hate to have the holdup be the city requires a 30-day waiting period to go through the morass of just getting it into the ordinance. That seems superfluous and unnecessary because it's not really evaluated, I don't think. I think once our staff recommend adoption, we usually just adopt it. But.
Mr. Ruskin?
Well, it seems like we're pushing through if there's a real reason to, but I guess I kind of agree. If you're projecting out ahead of time that you're going to do this and you're building a truck, you should kind of know what the timeline is. You should get on it. I know it might be another 60 days before it gets warm, but you'd think they'd want to probably get at it here pretty soon. So maybe this will help get people moving. I don't know if the process is all that cumbersome.
I guess what I look at is what's the value that we get from whatever the waiting period is. Typically, if it's a notification process and there's some legalities involved and you want to give appropriate notice and all of that, those are some reasons. If there's some particular reason or value that we have a defined waiting period, you know, I would entertain it then. Mr.
I'll go on the record saying I'd love to do the same for restaurants too. So if there's some unnecessary wait for restaurants, I'll get rid of that too. I mean, it's not, this is not particularly food trucks. It's for all sorts of things. So help me. We just did it for massage therapist license and trying to get that. So let's do it for other stuff to make sure we get it going. But,
The biggest difference between restaurants and food trucks is restaurants are responsible for the health, welfare, and safety of the environment where the food is consumed. That's not necessarily the case with the food trucks. So there's, at least I understand the difference, but I'm with you 100%. Why put unnecessary delays into the process?
So where are we at? So the city clerk has suggested some language changes. Presumably that would come forward to us. Based on today's discussion, for this is a question of public hearing, or just come forward under reports or recommendations? What's the procedure you'd like to use to consider formal adoption of any changes?
I mean, I'm fine with consent agenda for this.
Well, the one, that's a good point.
I mean, the charter change.
One change would have to be referred to the Charter Commission.
Right.
If we hear, we're going to hear from one of the 10 people on that prior slide, I'm guessing. So we'll know if we have to adjust something. But I would say we can put this through reports and do that. Do what we can under reports and recommendations and move forward.
All right.
If you want a public hearing, I'm happy to do it.
Mr. Mayor.
Is the parking issue still an issue if you don't have specific zones? So they can pull in any place then. Right.
That would be what we'd be proposing. They'll need to identify, you know, places that are open, but they have the freedom to do that within the larger zone area.
Otherwise, I'd say that $17 fine is pretty cheap for.
Well, it's a $5 fine with $12 goes up to the Timpalenti fund.
Roger, that's true. Right, one for each space they're taking. If they pull parallel in the diagonal spots, they're taking 3-4 spots.
That's true.
Yeah, they are. But the ones, the cars that are parking there are just taking up that one
okay.
spot. They're taking up all night.
All right.
The only observation I would have, if we, just in general, if we remove specific zones and we allow operators to park wherever they can if the designated spots aren't available. One of the things that I've heard from operators is they like a certain amount of consistency. Their customers get to know that they're going to be in this location and they plan on that. Now if they're suddenly, you know, a block away, I don't know if that's a concern or not. But
well, I would really, I think keeping those designated spots after hours when it starts at 9:30 is a good idea. I mean, the frustration is, well, if they're full, I'm out of business for the night. Can I operate somewhere else? And having that flexibility, I think, is really a good thing. I agree with you. I mean, from the business perspective, they definitely want to be, try to be in the same place that consistent time.
Or pretty close, yeah.
And I don't think that, I mean, I think it helps with, from the standpoint of the traffic and the parking downtown. There's some people used to the expectation, even though not everybody observes that no parking sign. Sometimes they do, and that works. The times that it doesn't, I think we're just looking for a little more flexibility to how we can accommodate them.
Okay. Mr. Campion.
Yeah, just a comment. I would say, if we leave it unset, I think just to reinforce the messages, we're willing to reestablish them. I mean, we've done it before. I think the goal here is to provide flexibility, but if we get the comeback that says we no longer have the critical mass to drive people to a specific spot, and that's hurting, you know, the industry to do, either they figure out how to do it themselves by aligning stuff, or we migrate and go back to providing a clearly delineated spot, and I'm fine with either.
Okay. Mr. Dobek.
I just think we're going to have a real hard time finding any place downtown to park. The food trucks, they go down there at 8:30 at night on a Friday, Saturday night. Good luck on finding a parking spot that they can put their trucks in. I think the fear I have is all of a sudden they're going to start blocking off spaces and trying to save them. And we don't want to get into that. So if we don't identify a zone, and the fact is it might work somewhere if there's not a lot of parking, but downtown on a Friday, Saturday night, you don't find parking spaces. cars are waiting for cars to back out to take their spots. So I think we need to really think about designating a location for food trucks to go. Otherwise, we might as well not have them, because if they have to find their own parking, good luck.
For the late night hour locations,
yes,
you mean?
That's correct.
To clarify, so I make sure that we have spaces now that are identified.
Right.
I'm not suggesting you should get rid of those. I'm just suggesting that add the flexibility of if those spaces are taken, that they wouldn't be precluded from if there were.
Well, and the problem, too, is we're going to be removing some of those spaces for this water, our retention pond that will go in there with the fountain. So we're reducing that about 3-4 spaces anyhow. So if we don't figure out where they're going to be able to go, you basically are killing the business, because there is no parking on the streets of downtown Rochester on Friday, Saturday nights.
Huh. All right.
I agree with that. So what do we want to do? Because I'm perfectly fine with putting the language in that says we will continue to maintain these spots. They should be your first choice. If you can't park there, park any spot on such and such a street.
Well, I guess my question is, how many trucks are we seeing? And there again, I'll go back to what I said before. If we can use the north side of 3rd Street, that's where we have a huge amount of people walking and congregating anyhow. And that does what the police department has requested on keeping it visible, so they're able to watch what's going on in the entire area. So,
Mr. Hickey. So we've kicked this around pretty good. Maybe we should get some suggested language. We may not get it, you know, the next shot may not be the final one. We might need to find one more. But I think we're pretty close now.
Yeah.
If we get some suggested language, we can
bring something
there
forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Reasonable?
Yep.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to the heart of the city. Presentation, discussion.
So I will kick this off. So both items 2 and 3 tonight, Heart of the City and the Chateau, that we have, are going to be on your council agenda packet tonight and the reports and recommendations. Just a couple pieces of housekeeping, if you will. The DMCC board heard both of these items and recommended approval by the city council, so that's what we bring to you tonight. We thought today we could give you a little more detail, so if you have some specific questions before we get to that meeting. And then also, both of these projects are within your approved CIP under the DMC section for this year. And so the funds, both the funds would be state DMC funds for those, the sales tax for the state funds directly that would come to us. So with that, I'll turn it over to Lisa.
Great.
And then Aaron.
Thank you, Steve. And good afternoon, council members and colleagues. First, I just wanted to thank you, some of you, for attending. Most of you actually attended the DMC board meeting last week, and these two items came forward for approval. You have seen all of the information before, so it's not new information. And as Steve said, you recall some of the projects that have been approved through the CIP, we decided to keep coming back for approval of the dollars when they're ready to be spent to keep you guys, you know, moving along. Same with the DMC board. So we want to just give you an update on that. Also, I wanted to thank the mayor for being the leader of the advisory committee for Heart of the City, actually, and Chateau Theater. So that's not an easy task, and thank you very much for that. So a quick update, Heart of the City, the timeline. We started the Heart of the City work in 2016. The advisory committee started, went through the process of schematic design. It was presented to our DMCC board in July, and I believe here as well in July. And then the DMCC, I'll speak for DMCC right now, the DMCC approved the preliminary CIP authorization that we're talking about today in November, just this fall of November. We also started discussions on integration with private developers or private landowners, with Chateau Theater, with Heart of the City, to really create what we would call a true destination initiative, which is pretty exciting right now. So we're at the time now where we're actually moving forward, and I think that's an excellent place for us to be. A reminder what Heart of the City is. It's along 2nd Avenue, Peace Plaza area, 1st Avenue, and Theater Square. This $350,000 approval is really just the start of the Theater Square area and 1st Avenue in terms of going from schematic design to what we would call design development, which eventually gets you to the construction phase. These are some of the things that were in the 1st Avenue Plaza, just to refresh your memory of what that could look like. Again, they will come back with more recommendations and sort of the next level of planning for this. Same with Theater Square area. Just a reminder of some of the components that were in the schematic design, and of course those will evolve now and change. And then the discussion that we've been having, as I said, is really about what can this part of the city integrated with private development and Chateau Theater, which Aaron will talk about in a minute, how can we really create this Theater Square redevelopment area along First as well to really create this true destination center that we've been talking about for years and years and years. The requested action, as you know, is authorization of the $350,000 that was in our CIP plan that you approved last fall. So I just want to stop there and ask if you have any questions about that or comments. And Steve, I don't know if you or Randy, if you want to do this one at a time or both.
Yeah, segments. Well, a good idea. Let's take a pause, see if there are any questions, comments on the Heart of the City aspect, Ms. Wojcik.
And remind me, in the 2018 DMC CIP, what is the funding source for that $350? Is that the state? The state proceeds?
State DMC and then state sales tax, DMC.
State?
DMC sales tax, state DMC fund.
There's no state.
GSIA.
I mean, sales tax.
Page 74 on the CIP.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Other questions, comments? Mr. Bilderberg?
Lisa, on the map and the slide beforehand, you had a couple, another one before this, and one more.
Keep going. It's right there.
All right. Well, I'm just curious, is this the phases that, is the numbers indicating when you're going to do or start to work
on
the project?
No, actually, almost the opposite. Number four and two is where we would start. Because of Chateau Theater and the power of that theater being sort of in the center of Heart of the City and what we can do around that, we want to start. This design is really just for number four and number two to start that.
Thank you.
We're not looking at the other portions right now. We have to phase it, as you know, as you guys all talked about last fall. All
right, Ms. Walker.
So I know one of the most frequent questions I get on this and is why is the art a big blue ball? It used to be a red ball, but it's important people realize that's not actually the art piece.
That's a good point.
But that is the most common question I get on Heart of the City. I do want to point out too that the per square foot costs on the vacated properties, the Theater Square and the Market Plaza, which is adjacent to a lot of private development, is substantially more than the per square foot on the First Avenue and Second Avenue side. So I do think it's, as this comes forward, the financing has to pretty aggressively take advantage of whatever kind of private contributions will come in. And this is something that needs to be brought to the council at the same time as this, not, we'll figure out how to pay for it later. And those folks have to be on board, because if they're not on board, it's not worth pursuing this or spending any more money on this, because the Theater Square and the Market Plaza just won't go anywhere without the private support. So I do want to see that. And specifically, I know both in this and the Chateau discussion tonight, one of the things that I'm going to ask for is that in the actual request for action, I think it's understood that looking at where the funds are going to come for this is an important part of it. But I want to explicitly put it in the council action that we're taking on both of these tonight, that the funding sources and timing of funds is something that has to be presented along with this, because that's the thing that concerns me the most about actually getting this done.
All right, Mr. Campion.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that sentiment. I mean, the Theater Square component, having served on the Heart of the City Advisory Committee, was probably the toughest part of the project for me to embrace. I think it's, I'm still the most timid about this entire application, about that specific section, and then to see that the price tag per square foot is actually much higher than the rest of it. I'm still looking for some clarity. What I want to know is, this money that's being proposed here, the product that's coming back. I think part of it is a financing plan. What I also need to know is, are we clearing up some of those elements that I think we had some pretty strong consensus that needed some of that cleaning up?
Yeah, definitely. That's sort of the next phase of this. So some of the things that'll be in this phase are Material selection, sourcing, phasing, scaling, capacity for water to serve the area, materials for tabletoping, green sustainability, and scenarios, tighten up these scenarios that we had so much discussion on originally. So you'll be brought along during this whole phase.
Well, as long as I'm brought along and not strung along, we'll figure it out. But I think from my standpoint, I know one of the pieces, this fountain execution, whatever we're doing for these replaceable, interchangeable components,
right,
that interface with the surrounding businesses on that plaza. And I don't know if Councilmember Wojcik made this point, or I might have missed it, but that critical mass of the private support, because it's going to be bi-directional. It's not one way, and this isn't just something we're hoping to deploy and not see some return on. So that bi-directional support of this facility is going to continue to be something I look for an answer on. So.
Okay. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, in addition to the comments on financing, I think we provided some feedback during that initial schematic design review. So I think there's still some concerns about the design and the cost of it. So it'd be nice that we have checkpoints where we can have options, you know, that based on cost. I mean, if funds were no option, we have a lot of things we'd like to do. Uh-huh. But it'd be important that it's phased and we have some checkpoints where we have some good input on what we think we can afford. And then there's always the discussion of, you know, these capital dollars, DMC capital dollars are great, but operationally it's going to be the city of Rochester forever and ever. So we just have to make sure that it all makes sense for the operational budget too.
And actually, I believe that in the next phase you will see checkpoints. We'll make sure that you see checkpoints so that we make sure that we don't string you along, rather bring you along. Got it?
Okay. Would you like to proceed with the Chateau discussion then?
Can I just ask for one point of clarification? Mm-hmm. I want to be as poignant as possible about a strategy for operation and funding of the ongoing operations must be a component of the next phase. Like, I won't fund another phase of this that doesn't come back with a plan for executing and facilitating the payment of that. Is that consensus here? I would. Okay.
Amen.
Perfect.
All right. Go ahead.
All right, Mayor, President, members of the Council, a lot of great work's happened on the Chateau Theater. Of course, you know, the Reuse Committee had their recommendation prepared on the $23 million capital expense, and then there was an operational assessment that went along with that. Since that time, we've been working on how to operationalize that and move forward. The DMCC board met in November of 17 and asked and challenged staff to come forward with a less capital-intensive option, something that had the opportunity to minimize some of the operating deficit that was envisioned, and really look for opportunities for interim activation of the site. And so that's what the team's been working on, so appreciate all the effort that everybody has put forward. Since that, we did retain Miller Dunwoody to do an evaluation in a couple of areas. I'm just going to get right to the summary of the expenses. So there was an evaluation on things we really need to do to preserve the building in our long-term ownership situation. Really the two key areas here are the window and the roof replacement. And the second area that was evaluated was building enhancements. That includes removing the escalator in the second floor, really making that interim activation more functional. And I guess when I talk about interim activation, what I'm speaking of is we've gone through a code review, worked with our building safety team, and just looked at it operationally on how can we get some limited uses within the building, about 400 people, or I think 490, is that the right number, Steve?
390,
there we go. So appreciate that. So just a little under 400 people within the space for different types of events. And this would really, you know, make that much more functional. Again, that item C for the interim use component is about $278,500. And then finally, as all these projects have, you know, there is a fee for developing the bidding documents. The estimated cost there is $887,200. The request that was put forward to the DMCC board was for a cost not to exceed $1 million. There's maybe a few things that are not contemplated here, some furniture, fixtures, and equipment that are needed to bring forward some interim activation of the space. So really look forward in those three areas. Also, looked at the potential for what next. So we're going to get an interim activation taking place. We have this long-term vision for a multi-purpose performing arts center. How do we get there with that? The team is taking a little bit of a step back there and said, how can we engage a potential development partner that can help us through this, but also to access some of those additional capital resources so we don't have to put forward the full $23 million in cost. The key areas there include new markets tax credit and state and federal historic tax credits. With that, you do have to work with the development partner on the ownership structure side of things, because with tax credit structures, you can't flow into a governmental entity. And so we've been working on that. Mm-hmm. And the next step that is envisioned there will be to issue an RFP to solicit potential development partners that could help us out with that and tax credits. So from a schedule perspective, really it is a 19 to 21 week turnaround. So you know, we feel like we could in 2019 have an activation of the space. There is some work that we have to do with the State Historic Preservation Office and our local HPC to get buy-off on some of that renovation work to make sure that it's consistent with the historic character of the building. But beyond that, most of the things are fairly straightforward bidding and permitting types of items. So it's an exciting thing. The DMC board definitely was enthusiastic in their endorsement. They really feel like there'll be a lot of value added, and much like the Heart of the City work that's being done, there's some potential to work with some of the private investment that's happening, whether it be in Wells Fargo or other areas within the Heart of the City area. So I guess with that, Lisa, did you want to add?
The only thing I would add also is in the CIP, I think we had $2.4 million for this, and we're asking right now just up to $1 million.
Okay, questions, comments, Mr. Woodgate?
So what I'm proposing tonight is, I think this is item F2, and a third bullet point that would read, direct staff to provide a preferred funding package and analysis of the use of new market tax credits, opportunity zone funding, and or preservation tax credits, which is what you said right here, and I just want it actually in the executed resolution specifically. So it doesn't sound like there's any disagreement on that.
Yeah, I think... are you talking about that as far as this particular
the RCA itself has two bullet points on there. I explicitly want to insert that as a third bullet point because I found that over time that that level of clarity right in the RCA is very good in future years.
All right. Other questions, comments? Mr. Campion.
So one of the elephants in the room about the Chateau project is, what is the status of the council's adoption of a future plan for the Chateau? Because my understanding is that we've not yet adopted the outcome of the Chateau reuse study as the official direction of the city.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
For lack of a better term, the string along portion of this is, to me, before we start talking about how to best align with the future reuse, that plan has to be adopted by the council. And to this point, that plan has not been adopted by the council. Stabilization efforts that are taking place are reasonable and well within the direction here. Before we talk about efforts that might work toward or against our future reuse of the facility, I would caution everyone to make sure we revisit and actually adopt said reuse strategy as a council, because to this point it's not the official direction of the city. I just want to be exceedingly clear, because there's been a time or two where this will get one or two more steps down the road and then people start making an assumption and talking as though that was always the plan. As well as several other council members have had concerns about that plan, not least of which is the $23 million price tag. I would want to wrap those up and be certain that that's the consensus of the council before we start moving past that decision point. So that's one piece of feedback. The other piece is you mentioned wanting to do an analysis with some of our departments. Is that already done, or is that to be done?
So back to the original point, is the council interested in having this come forward concurrent with this work in terms of getting that feedback on the check-in and whether, you know, this is the direction? Or, I mean, another thought would be is you could tie that to the issuance of the RFP. I think the way we intend to put the RFP together is mm-hmm. that the council will receive that, authorize, you know, the release of that as we solicit development partners. But within that document, you know, you're going to provide a framework for what it is you really want to see and solicit from people. So I guess, you know, that's potentially responsive to that idea of having a check-in point on the overall, you know, future vision of it. Because, but I also want to caution the council a little bit that this is going to be somewhat iterative. I mean, the goal of bringing a development partner on is to really, you know, get their experience and feedback with how this could work out best operationally, mm-hmm. what kind of ideas they might have. And, you know, I think this is, you know, maybe a step in the journey.
And my feedback is just more driven off of some of the construction of the packet, which I think was well-intentioned, that look at, we can double dip here, we can get reuse value and rehab value out of it, so we can double dip that way. It was not intended as an indictment of what was presented. It's more of, I'm very critical, having historically seen things that get ahead of the decision making, that I want to make sure that the council has an opportunity to ratify and adopt as an official position a strategy for reuse of this facility. I think as part of the RFP project, great opportunity for us to sit there and throw darts and trying to figure out what the appropriate balance is of public use. Is that one okay? Can we revisit the other one? Because it sounded like there was maybe a need to get with some of the city departments after we've agreed to this. Is that, or is that not?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
they've already done their evaluation of what it takes. Okay.
Yeah, no, we definitely have had that engaged.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Bildebeck, then Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I agree with Nick's comment that what they're looking for now is just to get the facility buttoned up, make sure it's good, and then be able to get to use it for some intermediate use. The second floor is a floating second floor. It's not connected to the building, and removal of that and the escalator are important if we're going to move forward. But I do agree with Mr. Campion, and it's been a conversation that the Chateau Committee has talked about heavily, is what happens in the future and where do we look. And I believe that Aaron's comment is very well taken, and the fact that there are some issues that came up and kind of slowed the process when you start talking about bringing in a private investor as well. So that's kind of created that slowdown. But what you're asking for, Nick, makes perfectly good sense. But this is just to get the building. One of the fears we have is not to be able to use the building at all. And right. The way it sits right now, it's unusable even for a small gathering group. So if we could do this and move this forward, that would at least allow us to continue to look at the future use of that facility, but get us to a place where one thing we told the public when we purchased a long time back already was that we were going to use it and let people be able to use it. Well, we haven't been able to, and we can't until we make some of these changes. And so, but your point is very well taken.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
So I think, Andrew, I just wanted to clarify, you're not suggesting we hold up this interim use tonight until we get the final plan?
Not at all.
Okay,
no.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
I think that these, so if I can add one thing, I would love to see something done in the Skyway. I'm really disappointed with the level of activation we've had of that space. That's now a city space that I want people to be excited about. So if there's some way to open up the Skyway with plexiglass or something that's relatively inexpensive that would allow people to at least look in and see what's going on, because it's a city facility. I agree with the sentiment that it's been underutilized. Let's find a way to activate it to get people to walk through there, because I know my kids, it was not that long ago, they used to walk through there and stare in awe at, you know, what was happening, mm-hmm. at the backdrop and stuff like that. That's exciting. I want the place to feel exciting. So I didn't see anything in the plan that was obviously calling out we were going to do that. There was some stuff about just access to maintenance from the Skyway level. I would really like to see some windows put in there that go all the way down to the ground so kids can see in and see what's going on. Not windows, glass, because there's going to be construction, but plexiglass or something so they can see through, because we should get people excited about it. It's an exciting project.
Okay. Mr. Ruska?
We talked about intermediate use. Have we kind of laid that out and how that's going to happen? If you're talking 21 weeks, you're talking five months from now. Is it going to be available to people to utilize?
So maybe I can jump in on the actual operation and maintenance of the space. So the key there, I think a couple things is so that the council probably understands for the community as well. So this is the work that we're going to do is going to be some very basic work, if you will. So it's just getting the building to be able to be coded and some of those things, and then some of those steps forward, like the moving the second floor. The operation and maintenance will follow suit with that. Really, it's making the facility available, and then talking like with the RDA, Jenna, and Steve from our music department, providing the space, but then the individuals utilizing it will really have to, at this point in the interim, bring in the chairs, bring in the table. So it's just activating it that way. And we're doing that on purpose, because we're not trying to say this is the end result. And that would be a much different operational plan that we'll bring forward to you. Is that?
Well, yeah, I just kind of, I've had people contact me before and asked, that they heard there was an event in there. How do they sign up for it? How do they check into the availability of that? And I think if we're going to go to this, through this process that way, we need to figure out and have it available to the public on how the process works and how the reservation process goes and all that. So, as well as that, because I can see weddings happening here in the fall and things like that people are going to want to know now if it's available. So when will that be? Is there a process in place now that allows people to contact somebody and find out if it's available?
Not to the end. I mean, there's a process where a few different people can be contacted, but what we want to do is brand together and say this is the process. This is the date that we believe. And a key to this will be to understand, especially as we get through and get a contract run, when do they think they'll be done? Because the last thing we want to do is start to reserve too early. And so we have to figure that out, especially if you're starting talking weddings or some other event. And so right now we've said by January of 19, but we hope we can back that up a little. Mm-hmm. But we have to wait till the next couple steps.
And I would imagine we're developing that process then as we're doing this all.
Yeah, and then once we have it in place, we'll get that out as soon as possible. So there's a 6-month lead time or whatever it is.
Fair enough. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? All right, thank you. Good information. We'll see what happens this evening. Our final item today is Councilmember Campion brought something forward related to a Cortec Innovation Community visit.
So, take it away. Hopefully, Mr. Parrish will be able to get this up because I couldn't get my laptop to work. December 20th, I believe the 22nd, visited St. Louis. With the DMC to talk a little bit about a development facility in St. Louis. And it's called the Cortex Innovation Community. And we can go to the second slide. The background on Cortex, it is an economic development program, not dissimilar in every way to what we're trying to do with DMC. Covers about 200 acres. That picture is intentionally impossible to read because it's a mixture of historic and future and kind of snapshot in time of all the different parcels they have going on. I'm going to go ahead and stand up because I always present standing up. So what you can see is they plotted out a whole bunch of different spaces, and the Cortex program is set up so that they take it much deeper than DMC. They're down to land use that is basically set in some of these different areas. They're a 501c3. It was formed in 2002. And it's enabled by St. Louis state law Missouri state law that basically enabled St. Louis to do a special zoning standard and to establish this 501c3 to then facilitate the economic development that took place there. 5 founding partners, 2-3 major universities. When you walk through there, you definitely get the vibe of a college campus. A lot of that activity taking place. BJC Healthcare down there as well. And then the Missouri Botanical Garden was one of the founding members. And if you look closely, I think it's yellow is the color. They outline some of the different properties, and they really tend to bookend the entire district. So I think what probably happened is someone at these universities sat down and said, gosh, it's too bad. You can see one of the ideas is they wanted to develop and capture the commercial benefit of all of the university and corporate research that was happening. So they had all this research taking place, and they said, the real problem with our setup is in St. Louis, everyone does all the research here and then leaves to go commercialize it. They leave, they go to...
Here.
Right. Not dissimilar from the message we hear out of the Mayo Clinic with a lot of their innovation. So what they did is they met up with a set of city legislators from St. Louis, state legislators, business, the boards of the different universities. They said, what can we do? How can we figure out how to keep people here? And the idea was really, we have this part of St. Louis that's really seen a decline in its utilization. So a lot of factory properties, a lot of old industrial properties that were still active ostensibly, but for the most part we're waiting for reinvestment that it has now started to come. So I'm just going to stop, point out a few differences. This is 200 acres worth of underutilized property just outside of St. Louis. Very different from the scenario we're looking at with the Mayo Clinic. We're talking with DMC, some of our most utilized property already falls within this district, continuing to build on it. So some differences, some parallels as we work through it. Next slide. Cortex Progress. They've been at it, most important bullet is the bottom probably, they've been at it for 15 years. So 2002, they've generated 1.7 million square feet of new rehabilitated space. So these are either vacant lots or derelict buildings that have been converted back into office use. Some really neat project, I would say. The buildings have a lot of character as you go in them, and I got some pictures to show. Leveraged about $550 million worth of private investment. So some pretty big numbers, but numbers that are not that dissimilar from what we're able to leverage here with DMC. 4,200 technology-related jobs, and I think we're on pace to beat them in about 3 years. So, but theirs is really centralized to a specific region that was didn't have any existing employment centers. So when you take, you know, adding 1,500 or 4,500 jobs onto our most concentrated employment center is a little bit different challenge than what they faced. They were really rehabbing a space that didn't have that kind of fortuitous future that we had here. Next slide. So I took some pictures. You can see pictures I took in the background, and I'm just going to talk over top of them. Cambridge Innovation Center, so it's founded in Massachusetts. The idea was really to commercialize technologies that were being generated in Boston at the time. And what they basically did is they said, gosh, the formulas work so well in Boston, we have an opportunity to export this. So they picked some centers around the United States and around the world to basically create micro centers of what they were doing in Cambridge. And so in 2014, they bought what was basically an incubation space inside of St. Louis called the Center for Emerging Technology. They bought that and rebranded it as Cambridge Innovation Center at the CET. And the idea is basically they find, develop, and support early stage entrepreneurs to promote the creation of high growth companies. So if you go to the next slide, you're going to see spaces that are straight out of Silicon Valley startup world. So as you walk through, you see a bunch of different kind of spaces. And so, down here you have a single desk. So they're buying one desk there. They're, you know, one person companies that are spending $40 to $100 a month to buy a certain desk. Then you have kind of your hangout areas. You have your shared office spaces. So you graduate from a single desk company, maybe a few single desk companies around you fail, you band together on that one of the idea that works, and you graduate to a shared office space. So now maybe you have 5 or 6 employees, you're gonna pay 3 times as much to sit up here than you sat down here, but you have more capabilities, more stuff. The interesting part is really probably down on the lower left. This is wet lab space. So what they did is 2016, they were basically adjacent to a research center for wet lab spaces with wet lab space that was looking to expand, and they realized they can't expand where they were at, had to move. So it was this great synergistic opportunity for CET to take over the wet lab space, and now they have a spot to put startups who need the wet lab space. So I don't know if people, there's all sorts of these incubators around, but very similar to the incubator that I toured in San Francisco, you rent a bench. So you rent maybe 3 linear feet of bench. That's where you do your day job. And then you have to bring your own equipment. they get this secondhand, very unique. You need that, and I think we have it here, which is what's exciting about Rochester. You need that critical mass of that sort of research that's taking place to provide secondhand equipment and all the intelligence it takes to drive it. They kept me safely behind the glass because they realized I probably don't have the intelligence to operate all that machinery. But very, very interesting facility. Next slide. So in 2014, in May, I believe, they bought that first facility. By September, they were saying, we need another one. So this building used to be cohabitated by DuPont. DuPont took over another building, which was kind of neat. They moved out, and the Cambridge Innovation Center said, we'll take over that space. We're bursting at the seams here, and we're ready to do more. So this building has a little bit different purpose. The first building was to capture those startups that might be in the first year life cycle. This is about getting that second stage for capacity for growing startups or for medium-sized mature divisions that might want to work. So really interesting amalgamation of different companies. You have like Square and Uber. Those are relatively new Silicon Valley startups. You have Northrop Grumman, that is aerospace engineering. They have a division that's operating out of there. And you have it surrounded by investment firms and other startups that want to do that. So the space, if you go to the next slide, I want to highlight some of the outdoor spaces on this one because it was pretty neat. This is a panoramic from one end of their plaza to the other. And I didn't include the second picture, but one of the coolest facets was this outdoor roof. And it's just a roof. There's not much else to it. It was just a cover. And basically, that serves as a magnet for all their events because the roof kind of ensures you can go on with an event in the rain. You can go on with an event if it's super sunny, you have some shade. But they've really talked about how they activated the plaza, how they got people from, I think you counted last night, there's 7 employment centers surrounding the plaza. So 7 buildings worth of people that share that plaza and pull out for, I think, the staff was saying they have yoga, they have workout sessions, they have all sorts of stuff going on in the plaza where you can come out and participate. Because you are in Cortex, because you pay the fee to be part of the Cortex community, you get to go out and participate. Pretty cool concept, something that's pretty neat. You can also see these are not brand new buildings. These are reusing old warehouse buildings. And from the outside, you pass by it, and you might not think twice to look inside. But I can tell you the inside is outfitted like every modern startup company. I mean, it's to the nines. I think they put a lot of investment into finding the right spaces to work. One cool thing that I want to put a personal push in for is outdoor plugins. I think with just the lifestyle people are living right now, where we're doing outdoor spaces, having that ability to throw your charger in or find some spot to plug in your laptop. Pretty neat way to just keep people with some of those creature comforts. And I can't imagine that cost more than $100 to put that in with a little flip cover to protect it from the rain. So pretty neat.
I can imagine.
Next slide. Oh, I did get a better picture. So the outdoor space, and then just talking about some of the indoor facilities. So this is their gathering space. The facility actually puts on monthly gathering events to bring people in from the outside. So obviously one of their big draws was they give away free beer once a month, and they said that they've had up to 300 people show up to those events. So, I think one of the takeaways for me was the realization that there's a lot of people pushing to see this succeed. So it's that investment that you get private that drives a lot of the success here. The public spaces, very great to have them, but they require that activation and that influx of money from the private organizations that really want to see it happen. So again, utilizing the spaces. Go ahead. So Dennis Lauer is the president and CEO of Cortex. They have kind of what we would kind of call an executive director, but because it's a 501c3, it's a company, they have a CEO, president. It's very fascinating to sit down and talk to him. We went all the way from how did you get the enabling legislation to what kind of advice can you give us about managing expectations? Here are the key takeaways. The plan cannot sit on the shelf. It's probably out of date the day you pass it. You have to evolve with the practical realities, what take place on the ground. So really powerful message for all of us to kind of realize that that plan is only as good as the most recent time we've taken to reevaluate it. Live-work-play is a long-term strategy, so you hear a lot of people talk about live-work-play as like the ultimate goal of a lot of the urbanization push, and I think his point is well taken. That's a long-term goal. You need to be practical about where your community is at right now and build to facilitate the existing usage while keeping that long-term goal in your crosshairs. So don't build away from that, but also take stock of where you're actually at. I'll keep moving. Parking. So to the chagrin of the urban planners, his biggest single problem is parking. So they have 200 acres of space, and they're working on literally the same challenges that we are. They go, we can't do surface lots. We know we can't build structured parking to park everyone. How are we going to do this? We have tenants. They're telling us they want more parking. How do we balance that transition? And unseen note here is they just got their first train stop. So they have, I went to school in Chicago, so we call it the Metro, but it's basically a commuter train that moves in and out of downtown. They now have a spot on inside of Cortex that allows people to get on off the train. They think that's going to do it. The one downside is that they kind of had to take the spot that was given to them. So the spot is away from the area they've already developed. So there's some work they need to do to get the area around the train built up now and to get that housing. But, you know, with everything, it's a give and take. Don't do just biotech startups. Very interesting message. You just cannot survive in the tech startup world with just biotech startups, because you're often talking about a decade worth of development before they have a product. You need to have a mix, and that healthy mix, it sounded like, was like three non-biotech to a biotech. So very interesting hill for us to climb in that regard. Lots of neat stuff going on in Rochester that I think is going to work on that. And then probably the most interesting conversation was eminent domain. We've had a lot of discussion about how you can leverage eminent domain, and I think it's pretty well-established law that you can't use it for economic development. And they have said they've not had any problems using it for economic development. So it was kind of an interesting back and forth trying to understand what kind of limitations they're facing. Versus they're in a situation where people want to get out of the properties. These are not derelict, but often underutilized properties that they'd be happy to sell or were. Now they're probably going to have some more challenges, because as the property values go up, you know, people are interested in doing the redevelopment. So, interesting conversation. Next slide. Takeaways. Transit investment, as I said, needs to be placed appropriately. Outdoor spaces need to be complemented with comfortable indoor spaces. They were really adamant that they see it as a balance. You really do need to have those indoor spaces that people get excited about working in. Diversity of the economy is important. As I just pointed out, you can't just do biotech startups, it won't work. And then Cortex has to balance additional politics of multiple stakeholders. On the right-hand side, I just put a picture in here of a pamphlet they give out to all of their members. And you might be interested to just say, I need a special piece of equipment in integrated microscopy, and they have a number and a name on there for you to call. That's the sort of thing that has tremendous value that they're doing, because they're in around three universities. Is you need this, here's the guy to call. Here's the guy who's working on the bleeding edge of that field that can help you figure out this problem you have. This connection sheet is worth the price of admission for these facilities. So very interesting perspective that I think we need to keep in mind is, as we develop this broader ecosystem with DMC, how do we help the outside reach into Mayo, leverage those facilities? How do we set up an environment where they can be successful? So pretty interesting little takeaway. Heavy reliance on additional tax mechanisms, and it's not as painless as it looks. They recently added an IKEA to their Cortex facility. So, you know, all best laid plans, you have to be flexible given the practical realities on the ground. And I think that was one of the practical realities, is they leverage a sales tax, so putting an IKEA in the Cortex region generates a lot of sales tax. So they're able to then use that to propel other developments that take place. Creative thinking might sound like a loss of mission to some, but it's really leveraging the tools you have to get the goal done. And they're struggling with very similar challenges that we are: housing, parking. These are realities in a lot of these economic development places. So fascinating trip, and that's it, I think. There you go.
I see that Commissioner John Turk now has his MD and PhD.
Perfect. He's been working on side gig.
Lisa, it reminds me a little bit of when we toured with DMC to Madison and went out to the, I don't know what direction that was, about 10 miles away from the campus. But a lot of this was very similar to that. And certainly Discovery Square here is incorporating a lot of that.
We're trying to take bits and pieces from many of these types of visits, and we've done some work online to make sure that we can find what works best for us. They're all a little bit different. And to your point, I think most people talk a lot about startups. This can't just be about startups or we will fail. So it has to be an integrated approach with some established business, startups. We're doing a little of all of that to start a first building in Discovery Square.
All right, Mr. Ruska.
I'd like to thank Nick for sharing. I think we went on a trip a while back to Indianapolis and Cleveland, and there's a lot of things that you take away when you see it in action. And you know, it's hard for us to kind of see it all in our community, but the thing important to remember is that we have our own strengths and we have our own setting and our own challenges and so on. But I think that by looking at what other cities do and applying that and seeing what has been successful and what works, kind of gets you excited about some of the things that we're heading down the track towards. I think sometimes we get frustrated at the costs and the processes and how long it takes and all the challenges that come across as we move forward. But when you see other cities doing it, it really helps. And I appreciate Nick sharing this with us because it does kind of reaffirm some of the things that we're working on and also makes us think a little bit about some other things that maybe we could apply as we move forward. So, very good.
Yeah, I agree. It helps validate a lot of the things that we're doing. Not everything we see in other communities is immediately applicable to ours and vice versa, and that's fine. But in general, what I'm seeing here is very much of a validation of the kinds of things we are doing with DMC, Ready, BioBusiness, you know, the confluence of entities that we have. So that's good. Mr. Campbell.
I would just say Mr. Lauer did offer to come to Rochester and talk with us. So it could be something that, you know, we work to establish that relationship. It could be something really valuable to us to have, you know, a set of eyes that have been through the ringer a few times come and talk to us. And one other thing, the education. The value of those educational facilities is immense. So reaffirm to me the necessity to drive education as a vanguard of what we're trying to do here. It's really a critical component. So very fascinating.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So any other business for this afternoon? Mr. Hickey?
I just wanted to discuss the process we're going to use for the comp plan tonight. So I think the markup version of Section 2 got posted at 2:30 today, so it's 200 pages. So I don't know if there was an expectation we were going to approve it tonight. That wasn't my expectation, so I just wanted to have that conversation now. And we're getting close. I mean, we made a lot of good progress, but
I was hoping we would. When I got the clean version, I read through the clean version as best I could. With the memo, but if it's something that we are not ready to do, that we need five votes. So I understand.
Yeah, I'm ready to go, but we need five votes.
All right. So we'll take up that discussion this evening, but it sounds like there could be some desire to have one more opportunity to read a final clean document. We'll see where it goes.
Your Honor, I would just maybe note for next week's committee of the whole, probably much to your disappointment, that unless something comes up this evening, there's a chance we would cancel next week.
All right.
I need to have that in my schedule. So I'm just kidding.
All right.
Just kidding.
Let's do something fun next week at 3:30.
All right. We're adjourned. We'll see everyone this evening.
Another cup of coffee.
No, you don't. Yeah.
get the extra.